Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this webinar. Now it's at a slightly different, or podcast, if that's what you're listening to. It's at a slightly different time today because I'm flying out to Sydney tomorrow to attend a conference. But I wanted to get in there and give you some weekly information. And the topic that we're covering today is what you should be thinking about doing and focusing on when you're around about that kind of 14, 15, 16 week gestation of your pregnancy. You kind of, yes, you're over the first trimester, you're in the beginning of that second trimester, but you're not halfway yet. But then you've probably started to tell everybody that you're pregnant as well if you're over that first trimester. And by the way, I believe you can tell people at any time. I don't think you have to wait. But anyway, I thought I'd give you a bit of a to-do list on things that you could are really good to be doing at this time in the gestation of your pregnancy. And I'll look at my little list that I've made ahead of time because I don't want to miss anything out. So firstly, lots to do on your to-do. The baby safety and infant CPR. So you want to know how to do infant CPR if that was ever going to be a situation that you needed. And, you know, actually, to be honest, you can't really do infant CPR courses generally on their own. They're really a resus course where we're talking about adult resus, and they'll also talk about doing children and infants at the same time. Generally, that's what you do in the community. But if you don't have a first aid certificate in CPR, get one. You're becoming a parent. You actually need to have some first aid skills, some proper first aid skills that you can, you know, relatively competently rely on. You're going to be in charge of a helpless human being that can't always tell you what's wrong. So that's a good thing. So really not just the CPR, it's a general first aid. But this is a really good time to get booked in for it. Make sure that you've done a first aid / CPR training before you get into that third trimester, really, because you're going to be very tired by that stage. Trust me, once you get particularly over around 31, 32, 33 weeks, you get pretty tired all the time. So you want to do that, tick that job off while you're in that second trimester. Another job for the second trimester is your baby clothes and equipment. So really start to nut out all your shopping. You do not want to be heavily pregnant and traipsing around the Westfield Mall at 8 months pregnant trying to decide on prams. It's just not a good feel. You want to take your time and get all those sorts of things sorted ahead of time. What I would say is you do not need to buy everything new, because remember, if you have a second baby, if this is your first pregnancy, then if you're having a second baby, well, they're going to have everything secondhand, aren't they? So I would say, you know, secondhand's absolutely fine. Save yourself some money on equipment. Spend some more better money on education. That's a way better priority. I think the two things I would say that is very good to buy new would be the cots, mattresses that are used. So that's actually the cot and the bassinet, but the mattress should be new. Always and new for a second baby as well. We know that science has some pretty good evidence, not well known out there, I must say, but some pretty good evidence is out to say that when there's an older mattress, there's higher risks of cot death, of unexplained SIDS. So I would say get a new mattress. And the other thing that's really good to get new is the car seats. Okay, so that's like the little wee baby pod, but then the old car seats as well. Always get those new, or if you're getting them secondhand, make sure it's from somebody you know, that you can know the history. What you basically want to do is make sure that you're not buying one that had a human being sitting inside it when there was a car crash, because it could have just very hairline fractures within it that you're not even aware of. So get a new one, or if you're hiring one, make sure that it's from a very reputable company. But I think that is an area that it's a jolly good idea to get new. Okay, so do all of that shopping if you can as much as possible in the second trimester. You want to tick all those things off. More things that you could do in the second trimester is make lots of extra meals. Get yourself a cheap freezer if you don't have a good, generous freezer space. Go buy yourself one cheap, dunga, old bashed up little freezer that you can shove into the garage and fill it, not full of beer. That's often called the beer fridge where I come from in New Zealand. People have a beer fridge in the garage, but no, we're talking about a frozen meal fridge. And every time you make a meal, do frozen versions of them, stick them in the freezer, so you've got weeks and weeks of pre-made frozen meals that are all wonderful, one dish wonders, delicious, that you can heat up once you've got this baby at home and you feel like you never get a moment to make a decent meal. Another thing to tick off your list is making sure that you understand who your local naturopaths are and your homeopaths. So get familiar with your complementary therapists in your area, so that I am a very strong advocate that you do have your wellness therapists that you regularly see as part of your family wellness care, as well as your local medical doctor, general practitioner who you see for illness. Okay, so you need to have both. And there's also some fantastic remedies, which is a whole other webinar, but fantastic remedies and treatments and therapies that you can be using while you're pregnant. But I want you to start to please put some effort into finding out where your local health shop is, getting to know your naturopath, maybe having a consultation so they get to know your constitution, and start to get a very holistic stance on how you're going to be looking after this baby, so that you are approaching it from a holistic wellness paradigm rather than just going, oh, I won't do anything at all until the baby's sick, and then I take them to the doctor and get some antibiotics. That is just the routine, and it's really not wonderful routine to have. Okay, in my humble opinion. Now, what else? My little to-do list for you. Get to know about the things that can reduce the chances of cot death or sudden infant death syndrome, known as SIDS. Particularly, look, the kind of the rules are face up, face clear, and smoke free. So get to know that information so that you can do everything in your power to make sure that that never occurs in your household, because it's a very, very sad event when it does. If you have high risk for potentially getting gestational diabetes, if diabetes runs in your family, or there's a whole little series of things that can mean that you are a risk factor, or if you've got already had what we call an HbA1c prior to your pregnancy, that's a blood test that shows if you've been in a diabetic state pre-pregnancy. So any of those things sort of going on, you'll be talking to your midwife or obstetrician. Then you may have a early GTT or glucose tolerance test done, typically at around 16 weeks, depending on your country's policies. And it's because if you were to have pregnancy diabetes early in the pregnancy, well, basically the earlier it's diagnosed, the better. First test is usually done sort of around 24 to 26 weeks, but if a woman is higher risk for it, then they can do it earlier, which is a good idea. You want to know, because so long as that woman manages to maintain normal blood sugar levels most of the time through her pregnancy, there's no consequence practically to the baby. However, if the woman has got uncontrolled diabetes and this ridiculous, really high hyperglycemia going on of high blood sugar, well, that really does impact the baby. So it's a good idea to find out. All right, what else is on the little list here? MSS2. Now, that basically is if you have missed out on having a Down's screen, which is an optional test to be done. The Down's screen test, and actually the Down's screen test isn't just a Down's screen test, it checks for other things as well, but people sort of tend to know it as that. So usually that's done at around 11 or 12 weeks. But if you miss that, sometimes women don't even know they're pregnant that early in their gestation. So if you have missed that and you want to do the MSS2, that is a special blood test in a lot of countries that can be done at around about sort of 14 to 18 weeks. It can be done up to about 20, but it's best done around 14 to 18 weeks. It's a blood test that the mother does, and it's checking for particular maternal markers that could indicate a higher risk or lower risk for three different things generally that are done, which is trisomy 21, and that's Down's syndrome, trisomy 13, which is Patel syndrome, and trisomy 18, which is Edwards syndrome. So these are not diagnostic tests. They are just coming back saying high risk or low risk. If you wish for diagnostic testing, that is black and white answers, or if you get a high risk result in a screen like the MSS2 or the MSS1, if you get that, then the commonest thing to do is an amniocentesis, which is done typically at sort of between 15. Well, it can't really be done before 15 weeks, but typically as soon as possible after that screen result came in saying high risk. Because, you know, let's say, for example, if you had the MSS2 test done at 14 weeks, say at the earliest possible, and that takes a couple of weeks to perhaps get the result back, or depending on the process, and then it's decided, or let's say a week to come back, well, now you're close to 15 weeks, 16 weeks, and it comes back higher risk and you want to book in for an amnio, it might take a couple of weeks to get into an amniocentesis. So, you know, now we're up to 18 weeks and then we need the result from that. And if the result is a conclusive answer of a chromosomal abnormality and the parents need to go through that decision, which incredibly difficult decision as to whether they are or aren't terminating, that then potentially is a late termination, which is actually inducing you into giving birth, and requires sort of extra consultation, counselling, obstetric approval, etc. So that can add to the delay. Yeah, so that's why it is better to get on with these things. But not everybody does any kind of screening whatsoever. You know, particularly if they absolutely know that they never, ever possibly would be terminating a baby, no matter what is going on with that baby, then, you know, that then there's no particular point in doing the screens because they're not definitive. Well, in my opinion, there's not a particular lot of reason to do the screens because they're not definitive. So it's not telling you your baby does not. And then if it comes back and looks like the risk factor is a little bit high and you're just choosing not to do diagnostic testing because that does have a risk of miscarriage, small, but it exists. Well, now you're worrying for the rest of your pregnancy. So it's all very tricky. It's all very tricky. And something that as a couple you need to really discuss. Now, next thing I want to talk about is the anatomy scan. Okay, so that is done generally between 18 to 20 weeks. And what we're looking at then is quite often people, I hear people say, oh yes, we're having the sex scan at 19 weeks. Well, no, it's not a sex scan. The purpose of it is to check all the anatomy. So that's, you know, has the baby got two kidneys? Has the baby got four heart chambers? You know, all of those things. And one thing that they will also look at is its genitalia. And quite often they're able to tell you or give you a pretty strong indication as to whether you've got a boy or a girl you're expecting. So that's not, however, the purpose of the scan. The scan's purpose is to look to see if it can see any abnormal anatomical malformations. So if you can possibly hold off with your excitement and exuberance of getting that anatomy scan at 18 weeks and wait till 20 weeks, that's even better, to be honest, because, well, frankly, the sonographer is going to have a better view when you see how tiny, in real terms, a 18-week fetus is. How they manage to see anything on those scans just always blows me away anyway. I mean, I can tell where head is, but I'm not a trained sonographer. And how they manage to see on this tiny, tiny little creature. So look, you know, particularly if you're a little bit of a heavier woman, a little bit higher BMI, look, be kind to the sonographer and to your baby, and have the scan more like 20 weeks if you can, so that, you know, they just get, frankly, a better view. So you'll get more accurate information. And you don't have to find out the sex. I think it's awesome when you don't, to be honest. I've been at loads of births that have known the sex and loads of births that haven't. And in fact, I've carried babies when I've known the sex and when I haven't. And what I would say is that if it's your first, oh heck, have a surprise, you know, like truly have a surprise. It really, really absolutely does, definitely without any doubt, whatsoever add to the excitement of the day. I'm completely convinced. And I know that people will, who have known what they're having would say, oh no, the day was still exciting. Yeah, nah. As a midwife, I'd have to say, knowing the announcer, you know, finding out at that moment of birth definitely adds a layer of excitement. Why would it not? It's a beautiful surprise. I think the exception would have to be when you're a woman who, say, I don't know, has three of the same sex already. And, you know, you're both really keen to have a different sex this time. So if there's a lot of hope on a particular sex, then I think it is a great idea to find out. So that if the news wasn't your greatest hope, you've got plenty of time to adjust to it, which, trust me, you will. And you will love that baby just as much as every other baby. Okay, so let me just take my little list of anything else that I wanted to go over. Oh, yes, finally, childbirth, antenatal education. So often, people just book on routine antenatal classes. And let's face it, peoples, if you are going to book on routine classes, expect routine statistical results. So if in your area, the routine thing to do is to go to, say, for example, a 6-week Thursday evening class or a 2 Saturdays class or whatever it is, and in your local area, the routine results is a 45% C-section rate. Well, when we add in the instrumental delivery rates, you pretty much would say you've got, you know, a 50-50 rate of a 50-50 statistic of a normal birth. And if you're happy with that, go ahead with your normal antenatal education. But the fact that you're even watching this, I know already you're not. You're not happy with normal routine antenatal education. You want more. You want to learn more. And I just want to congratulate you because honestly, girlfriend, that is the best thing that you can be doing. And I'm very excited to have you part of this journey. And we are, there's loads we're going to cover off. But in the meantime, at this gestation that you are right now, I want you to start to really pay some attention on what's available in your area. So do some really good homework. Don't muck around because a lot of these places can get really booked up and then suddenly, you know, you're 20 weeks pregnant, realize you haven't got anything booked and it's actually a problem. So get booked on everything that you possibly can. You know, if the hospital locally has some free breastfeeding class, go to it, or even if you have to pay for it. Let's say if you've got local hypnobirthing classes that you could book into, well, get booked into them. You know, some of the stuff you may decide later down the track that you don't actually need because we're going to cover them off when you're part of this. But if you're not doing the private one-on-one consultations with me, the virtual online consultations, then if you're just doing the group stuff, yeah, I would say I think you should do the group hypnobirthing classes. Hypnobirthing is the most amazing pain relief ever. I have witnessed it numerous times. It's absolutely stunning. But that's another whole topic that we will talk about. What I'm saying is, get really educated, you know, find out what's available and start to get booked in for them, so that you know you've got your education all sorted and in place and scheduled into the diary, not too late in your pregnancy. I would say as early as possible in your third trimester or at the very end sort of your second trimester, somewhere in that period. So let's say somewhere between 24 and 34 weeks in there. Okay. And get yourself to the library and make sure that you're reserving the books that are hard to get. Probably the two that I think are particularly fantastic would be Ina May Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth and Janet Balaskas, B-L-A-S-K-A-S, Janet Balaskas, and New Active Birth is her book. So go get yourself those two. Now, if you not in America, then I would just give you a warning on both those books that sometimes you can find them being a little Americanized, that there's sort of almost a obstetrics versus midwifery sort of slant to them. And not all countries have those, that sort of situation of people sort of opposing, and you almost have to, the midwife has to save the woman from the interfering obstetrician. You know, yes, it does happen. But just know that different countries have different levels of need or lack of need for that. So if you reside in a country where care is managed mostly by the midwives and then they bring in the obstetricians when there is a consultation required because things are not progressing as they should be, then you probably don't need to be too worried about the defense. But I still want you to read the books because it's about layering. It's about the more layers upon layers upon layers of information that you put into your brain, the more birth stories, positive birth stories that you hear. I'm not talking about your girlfriends talking, telling you, oh, let me tell you about my 37-hour nightmare, blah, blah. No, I'm not talking about that. Don't want to, just shut your ears to those. Don't listen to those. Yeah, I'm talking about layers upon layers upon layers of normal birth information. And you start to feel this pattern that comes through and you start to realize for yourself, because everybody's birth is different. But at the same time, everybody's physiology works fundamentally the same. So it's when you hear the stories after stories after stories, it enables you to get empowered so that you understand when it's happening to yourself, because you'll recognize it. You'll recognize pieces of story. You'll go, oh, I remember that story in Ina Mae Gaskin's book, Guide to Childbirth, and when she was talking about blah, blah, blah. Or you'll remember Janet Velasquez's birth, Janet Velasquez's book, talking of new active birth, saying the same thing. Oh, that story about that particular client. And the last thing that's an absolute, I want you to please, please, please sort out, is getting yourself a copy of my book. Oh Baby, Birth, Babies and Motherhood Uncensored. It's almost 500 pages. You really want to have it in your hot little hands by the time that you're entering that third trimester. Okay, that's the ideal time to start to read it. It'll just help you through the last part of your pregnancy, and then there's a really significant chapter on childbirth that I so want you to read, and I want your birth support person to read my chapter on childbirth. Let's face it, they're not going to, well, most of the dudes, because I'm mostly dudes as partners, but most of them are not very interested in reading a whole book on childbirth. But if you ask them to read one chapter, they will do that. So yeah, I want them to read that chapter and you to read that chapter several times would be good. Or maybe you read him the chapter, that'll be fine. If your partner is a woman, well, that could be quite advantageous, to be honest. She just might be more interested, which would be great. Wonderful. She might have even had a baby herself. How fantastic is that? Okay, anyway, so what else do I want to tell you? I think that's everything for the day. All right, so that's a lot on your to-do list. Yeah. But that's what I want you to be doing over the next month or so, okay, is getting all those things ticked off. Because trust me, once you get over 20 weeks, you'll feel like time flies by like a jet engine. And then, ironically, when you get to 39 weeks, time slows down to almost a feeling like a complete and utter standstill. Anyway, I'm ending it there, and I want to wish you a wonderful rest of your day and your week till we catch up next time. Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.